You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net.
What started as a little experiment turned into a monolithic monster, and we're on the loose in your neighborhood.
Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and welcome to the NativeTalk.net radio program. We're so glad you could join us today. Brandon will actually be joining us a little bit later as we talk about holidays, some of the most favorite holidays and stuff like that about New Year's. So that'll be coming up right after the break. In the meantime, you can email the show, podcast@nativetalk.net, and as always, you can make comments through the Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/nativetalkradio. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about government, the government of the Sioux Nation. As now we're going back in time to before the colonial era, so the way the tribal governments used to be. Now, at that time, there were seven large tribes that made up the Sioux Nation. You had the, please forgive me if my pronunciation is off, these are difficult names, but Wukdiwokanton, Siseton, Teton, Wapikut, Wapiton, Yankton, and Yanktonai. All right, so seven tribes, large tribes, made up the Sioux Nation as a whole. And each village had a village council. All right, so think you've got a large government and you've got smaller governments that are put together. And each village would select, each village council would select their own chief. Now, a chief served for life. Now, back in olden times, women in different tribes are different, but in this particular case, women had no say in government at that time. All the adult men in a village were members of the village council. So the men would get together, choose their chief. The women just kind of dealt with it, I guess. Now, the village council was divided into several parts. So within the council, the men broke up into smaller groups, each one with a job to do. One group might be in charge of law and order. Another one might be in charge of village festivals. And then they would hold personal elections to see who is going to be the leader of each section and a leader of them overall. Now, once a chief was elected by the council of men, the chief would assign, the chief assigned each group a responsibility, so he decided who does what. So one year, the chief might assign one group the job of, hey, making sure people obeyed the laws of the tribe. That's like law enforcement, right? And then he would switch it. So, hey, your group, this year you're doing something different. The idea there is to make sure that no one group became more powerful than another. Now, I've read a lot of articles and theories. It's hard to say. But when the Europeans came to America, the continent of America at the time, a lot of people believe that they saw a lot of what the governmental structure of the way the Indians, the Native Americans, were doing things, and they decided that looks like a pretty good way of doing things, and they modeled the United States government on, in many ways, the Native American government, and changed it in the fashion of what they were used to back in England. Now, tribes were, and I don't know if that's true. I just heard that as a theory, because so much of what the native original indigenous people did reflects so well on what the United States decided as their form of government. So who knows? I would have to do more research. But hey, if you've got any thoughts about that, please email podcast@nativetalk.net. Now, the tribal councils, the tribes themselves, the larger tribes, were made up of several different villages. So, and each tribe had a tribal council with a chief. Again, jobs were assigned to smaller groups within the council, and they would take members from each of the several villages. They wanted to make sure that no one group took dominance in the decisions of the tribal council. Kind of a separation of powers, if you will. And then they had the Seven Fires Council, which was the top governing group. This is like the Supreme Court, if you will. Now, this council, the Seven Fires Council, made decisions for the entire Sioux Nation. The Seven Fires Council was composed of all seven tribal chiefs, one from each of the seven tribes, sort of like a board of directors, if you will. The chiefs would bring helpers with them, but the actual seat at the council was reserved for the chiefs only. So they kind of had this governmental, very organized structure, and it ensured that decisions were made for the good of the whole, and nobody was too powerful. Nobody would rise to the level of like a dictator or something like that. So well ahead of their time. I thought that when I read that, I thought that was a wonderful structure there, the way they figured that out. So anyway, the Sioux government there for you. Now, when we come back from break, Brandon will be here. As I mentioned, we'll be talking about holidays. We recorded this right after the new year, so I think that will be enjoyable. And by the way, the new year, a few years ago, so it's a little bit old, but I think it will be quite enjoyable for you. You've never heard it before, so we'll be back with that in just a quick moment here on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
This one could get emotional. You're listening to NativeTalk.net.
If you want to be an adoptive parent, it doesn't matter if you're a little different.
I'm a book troll.
Oh, really?
What do you look like?
Your ears aren't pointy.
I slept on them funny.
Or what you sound like. You just need to be there. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care don't need perfection. They just need you. Call 888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Our House Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our House, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon.
When the white man discovered this country, Indians were running it. There were no taxes, no debt, and women did all the work. And they thought they could improve on the system? Good job, guys.
Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio program. Message line. If you want to call up, drop us a line, leave a message. 970-278-5791 is the studio phone. And as always, visit us online at nativetalk.net to download and listen to any or all. You can listen to all of them, our past shows there at nativetalk.net. All right. Let us get to the meat of the program with some interesting, fun stories and things like that. So here we go. Did you know that Christmas in Russia isn't until like the first week of January? It's like January 7th.
Huh. And just, this is my ignorance shining through. Everyone uses the same calendar, right? That's not that kind of thing.
That is not true. The world uses the same calendar for
like, you know, regular dates, but the churches use the old calendar. And the way it used to work is every, we got 365 days, and every 4 years we have a leap year, correct?
Yeah.
And that's where you add an extra day. The problem is adding that extra day, you add slightly too much. So every 100 years, you skip a leap year.
Oh, yeah, I guess I haven't lived long enough to make that realization.
No. And so the old calendar, every 100 years, is a day off of the calendar that we use now. So they went back and revised it to have, like, a skip a leap year.
Well, I think next year I'm going to have to plan a flight so I can get Christmas here, and then I'll jump over to Russia, get a second Christmas.
What is your favorite holiday, by the way? This is a holiday, New Year's Day.
Ooh, I'm going to go with Arbor Day. Yeah, Arbor Day.
That is not a holiday.
It's on the calendar.
Not really. Come on. What's your real favorite holiday?
My real favorite holiday, I'm going to have to go with Memorial Day. And the only reason that's my favorite is because when I was a kid, that was the weekend we always went to my favorite camping spot. So that's got to be – it's ingrained as my favorite. Even now that we don't go, it's still my favorite because of that.
Now, what is Memorial Day for those who don't know?
Good question. I'm going to leave that to you.
Okay.
It's camping day.
No. Okay. No, it's a day that we're supposed to remember our troops, the people who fought in wars, who died in wars. We're supposed to remember our armed forces.
No, and I'm just curious because I thought that was Veterans Day, which is why I deferred to you. But is that like to veterans is supposed to remember
veterans,
the survivors?
Yeah. Veterans is like all of the people who are alive who served in the armed forces. Memorial Day is supposed to remember the people who fell.
Okay.
Fighting for our country.
That makes sense.
And that came in seventh. That's the seventh most popular holiday in America. What do you think is the first?
Oh, present day.
Present day?
In both the literal sense and, I mean, it's like
okay, it's not
the holiday that just passed where we got a whole bunch of presents.
Christmas.
Yeah.
What do you think's the second?
Oh, Valentine's?
Valentine's Day ranks 10th.
Yeah.
Out of 10th.
Yeah, I'm surprised it even made the top 10, I guess. But I don't know. Maybe Turkey Day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving. Let's see if you can get the third. We'll just the top three.
We got number one, Christmas. Number two, Thanksgiving. Number three, Easter.
Easter came in fifth.
Okay. I don't know, man. Can you give me a hint? Do I get hints? Halloween.
Yeah, and we talked about, you know, just a few months ago, Halloween passed. And even though it's not really a holiday, people take it as one and they enjoy it. You know, the adults go to parties, kids go get candy. And we talked about some of the traditions surrounding that. Fourth is the 4th of July. Fifth is Easter, as we mentioned. Sixth is New Year's. That's where we're at here, right smack in the middle. Then Memorial Day, Labor Day is 8th. Your birthday is 9th.
That's not a holiday. Does everybody take my birthday off? I was unaware. I've been working every time.
Well, people like it anyway. But yeah, last is Valentine's Day and Hanukkah. So it's but you know, it's interesting. Having traveled to a lot of different countries, the different traditions that people have for the same holidays. Now, you got to share a little bit of Russian not really traditions, but some Russian foods. What was your impression with that?
Oh, so good. Oh, my gosh. Like, your wife, she made this chicken Latvian style, and it was better than, like, many, many chickens I've tasted. I thought it was really well spiced and everything, and it was different, you know? Like, it doesn't taste normal when compared to other foods that I'm used to tasting. So it was a nice change. And I don't remember the dish that her friend brought. What was that called?
Olivier.
Yeah, yeah. That stuff? Mm-hmm. I'm making that at home.
I always called it Russian potato salad because it's kind of like potato salad, but it's not. It's like Russian style.
But what I like more about it is the potatoes were cut so small, so it didn't overpower the other ingredients. When usually if you have potato salad, it's like you're getting half a potato with every bite.
Right. And I appreciate that as well. But I didn't know what else to call it. If you're going to describe it to an American, Olivier doesn't mean anything.
No, I'd probably just start describing ingredients. rather than have a name.
Oh, and I do. I tell them it's like Russian potato salad, but the potatoes are cut up. It's got carrots and cucumbers.
This one had cucumbers, pickles. Peas, and yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that as well. But we kind of missed out on some of the New Year's traditions that Russians typically will have and engage in. For example, for us in America, New Year's is kind of, let's go out and have a party, you know. You go out to a club and dance, and it's a time that you spend with friends. But in Russia, because remember, we mentioned that Christmas isn't until the 7th, and they don't give presents on Christmas. They give presents on New Year's.
Okay.
So this is like your the best equivalent to Christmas in America, because they don't have Santa Claus. They have it's called Ded Moroz. Ded means grandfather, and Moroz means frost. So okay. Grandfather Frost brings all of the presents and gives them to your parents, and then at midnight you pass them around and everybody gets to open presents at midnight. Then they go outside and light fireworks and have a good time, and right before midnight they the president, whoever the president of Russia is, comes on and gives a big speech, pre-recorded of course, because it's played in each time zone right at midnight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's an inspirational speech. Everybody gets excited, and we make resolutions here in this country. They make like a wish, like a kind of the same idea, but it's like a wish for the new year.
We say our resolutions in America. We don't make them. They stop 2 weeks later.
You know what? In my opinion, New Year's resolutions, the way Americans do it, is one of the dumbest things ever.
I don't participate.
If you're not going to keep it.
And if you're going to change anything about your life, why are you waiting? Just do it whenever you think about it. Yeah, there's no
reason
to
wait. You're much more likely to keep a resolution if you make it organically in like June. You know, or if it just happens to come up around the New Year time, that's fine, because that's not the same thing as New Year's resolution.
Right, right. And you know, I actually like the sound of the Russian New Year's, because, I mean, first off, our Christmas has always been missing fireworks. We should do that every – I'm adopting that.
We should definitely.
Yeah. If we're giving presents on New Year's, we need to have fireworks on Christmas.
Yeah, and do it at midnight.
Yeah. So – I definitely think that sounds fun, and I want to. You owe me a present, Cliff. You missed a day,
and that's why I guarantee you in Russia, New Year's is not going to end up what is it, sixth the way it is here. It's firmly at number one. No holiday is more important to Russians than New Year's Day.
Well, and honestly, to me, New Year's and Christmas kind of blend together. They're only a few days apart. The kids have it off from school. You know, depending on what job you have, you may also not have to go to work. I think those two kind of blend together, even though they are separate.
Yeah, and so one of the other cool things that they do is when they make their resolution, they have and not every Russian celebrates this, but I've experienced this. They have a candle that you light, and about 10 seconds before midnight, they start, you know, bonging the bell. Bong, bong. It's like a countdown.
Where's the bell? Is it in the homes or outside?
It's usually on TV.
Okay, okay.
Because you just watch the president give his speech, and then they have the bell, and you know that, oh, it's almost here, and you see the countdown. And so quickly, you write your wish for the new year on a piece of paper, burn it, drop it in the champagne, and down it.
Oh, man.
Because what you're doing is you're taking your wish and you're putting it inside of you so that it'll come true in the year to come.
That's hardcore.
It is. And it tastes burnt and it sticks in your throat going down. But I'm like, now it's going to come true. And honestly, all of the years I've done it, it's all worked.
You know, so. I am regretting every American holiday I've had now. Why were we not doing this the whole time? We get to burn things. We get to drink, go outside and shoot fireworks. Yes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's nothing like our experience here in America.
Tell me more. I want to know more about this fanciful place you call Russia.
Well, and because Russia is so cold, you can't really go outside and have a good time the way you can here. I mean, people don't usually go outside, but, you know, more so than in Russia. So it's much more of a common thing to come together and sit around a table, and it's a feast all across this table, and you just eat and talk and have fun all night long. It's really pretty cool. Here in America, on the other hand, more cars are stolen on New Year's Day than any other holiday.
Happy New Year!
Now, if you had to choose a nationality to spend New Year's with, who would you pick?
A nationality?
Yeah, like a country.
Like, pick where to go.
Yeah, you want to, or at your house, or I say go there, yeah.
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know enough about other countries. That's why I'm here. I'm here to learn from you.
Well, there was a survey, and the Belgians and the Swiss ranked last. You do not want to spend New Year's with those losers.
Oh, wow.
And Brazilians placed first in a recent global vote for the best nationality to spend New Year's Eve with.
I wonder if it's a big old party over there, like Carnival
or something. Yeah, like Carnival. And I was reading another survey that the Brazilians are farthest away from, like, if you rank yourself, like, what's your personality as a nationality? Like, you know, how do you view yourself? And then they did a test to assess how they really were. And the Brazilians were farthest from what they thought to what they actually were. So they're completely delusional.
Now, are they delusional in a negative way? Like, they're like, oh, we think we're not that great.
They thought that they were stable and no problems, but actually they were neurotic.
And how did America rank on that list?
I don't remember. It was in an English file book. It's been a couple of years since I've taught that. But it's based on a news article, so.
I was just wondering, because you hear everywhere, we are number one, we are number one. And then you look at the rates of how our education system is, and it's like, no, we are not number one.
Not even close.
So I think Americans are often delusional about how great our country is.
All right, next up, technology. Do you remember back in the old days when they used to tell us about we were going to get flying cars in the future?
I was looking forward to that. I wanted my Back to the Future hoverboard, dude. That was my dream.
Yeah, that would be awesome, but I doubt that's ever going to happen.
I'm still holding out hope. Don't crush my dreams yet, all right? 2020 is just around the corner.
Yeah, right. But don't you think that a self-driving car is probably more likely?
Yeah, actually, I've heard Google's been having a lot of success with that over the years.
They have. Do you like it? Do you like that idea?
I like the idea for other people. I don't like it for myself.
Why not?
Well, other people are horrible drivers, and I love driving.
And what happens when regular cars become outlawed, and they say, hey, everyone has to drive self-driving cars?
That's
going to come eventually.
I don't think it will, because I think there's driving is a motorsport. It's like saying, okay, we're going to play football, but only on Madden. We're only going to do simulated football. We're not going to play real football anymore. It's a sport. It's something people enjoy to do. They love to drive their motor cars.
I think they're going to end up having like places where you can do that and places where it's not allowed. Like here in the country or over here, you can go into manual mode and drive your car. Like, I think all the cars are going to have self-driving abilities, but a manual mode that you can drive. But in some places they say, hey, you can't do that.
Yeah, but what about road construction? I mean, the car is going to have to it's going to have to recognize hand signals. I mean, I don't think that's going to be as effective.
No, it's all going to be done by computers because everything is going to be networked. If you don't cell service is everywhere. And soon internet service is going to be all across the country everywhere you go. It's almost there. And once your cars are all networked and all of the traffic signals are in that network, it's going to be.
But I was referring to road construction. Say I'm on a back street trying to go to college, right? And I'm not on a major street. I'm on just a neighborhood road, and they have one lane closed down, and I have to wait for someone's wait stop sign and then proceed slowly sign.
They're gonna have a computer that talks to your car.
I think that they're going to have a manual mode because any computer system is going to have glitches or failures. You have to have the fail safe of having a human mind able to analyze a situation in different ways than a computer can. And if you have a manual mode, and if it's me driving and they say, you're not allowed to use manual mode on major freeways. Okay, let's say you get off the freeway, you can do whatever you want. But on the freeway, you have to drive in automatic mode. You know what I'm doing? I'm turning on manual mode and driving in manual mode.
You know,
that's
thing,
the way I like to drive.
The thing that really concerns me is when you're in automatic mode and the car is driving and suddenly, you know, something happens on the road that is, you know, things just happen. And then your car suddenly accelerates and slams you into a nearby concrete wall on purpose. And, you know, basically your car murders you and everybody agrees with that. Can you see that situation happening?
No.
What if there's you're a 45-year-old childless man with a crappy job, and there's another car that has a 25-year-old mother with three children, and the other car has a world-famous pianist, and they're all networked together. They're all self-driving, and the cars understand the situation. Something's going to happen. Somebody has to die, and they crash you because everyone else is more important.
Yeah, we took a... You just made a huge leap that I can't get behind. We went from cars that might be coming out to be self-driving to I'm taking a pianist over a 45-year-old child, a man with no children. That's a – come on now.
No, but like, that's where it eventually is going to go. And these kinds of discussions and arguments are going to take place before it ever happens.
Yeah, okay. So according to the English Express, our official statement is that Google's self-driving cars are the beginning of Skynet. And
yes.
So John Connor should be here any minute.
Hey, I think that it's going to start putting certain lives above others, you know?
Right, and then once they become self-aware and realize that the computers are the most important, all of the cars are going to crash at once and humanity will be destroyed. This is Mecha Armageddon.
Well, this is a conversation that is being had because this is where the future is looking to. Who knows if it's 30 years or 50 years in the future or 10? I mean, we don't know because it's going to be a slow move towards the future. But MIT Technology Review, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they have a study where they surveyed just this huge number of people about whether or not they're okay with their cars making life or death decisions and deciding to kill this person or let that person live.
Was a real study? They actually went around and asked these questions to college students?
Not college students, regular people all over the country.
Oh.
It was just done at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
They're the ones who conducted it.
And the result is, yes, people are okay with that as long as they're not the one sacrificed. Sacrifice that guy, not me.
Yeah, and I kind of think that the technology is a little better than that, too. Like, I think that if a computer situation was – like you said everyone's in automatic mode. So what situation could arise that the computers haven't given everybody following distance and have a plan?
Weather conditions, you know, a falling boulder where the cars understand, you know, something's happening. And you know, your car decides to rescue, you know, like the 25-year-old mother of three is going to be the one died and you're going to be the one saved. But it's your car becomes self-sacrificing and you're like,
yeah.
What are you doing? No, no, ah! You know, and it sacrifices you to save them because of the real world situation that can't be foreseen.
Well, right, and that's what I was talking about following distance, is that these programs are going to have it set up to where if you have, you know, 100 Google cars in a row, they're going to be to the point where their following distance is like the maximum stopping distance in any weather situation. So no matter what, if a car traveling 70 miles an hour comes to a sudden stop, there's enough following distance to the next vehicle that they have room to slow down and stop in any weather situation, and the computer knows that's the situation. So there should always be room for error between cars. There should never be a moment like with human drivers where there's only, you know, three car lengths of distance. There's always going to be 15 car lengths, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That'll do it for us today. As always, thank you guys for listening. We had a good time talking about technology and favorite holidays and holiday-related stuff around the world. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio. As always, available online at nativetalk.net, where you can go and download any number of our past shows. Phone number, if you want to call up, drop us a line, leave a message, 970-278-5791. And we do hope you'll share the show with our friends. Send them to our Facebook page that you can find, facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day. We'll see you guys next week.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. We're out of control. Listen, before the government gets involved. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Bye.